I think the key, and this would actually be true for YouTube, be true of the podcast, be true of the website, it's to produce really good quality content on a regular basis. And then most importantly, see what people, you know, pay attention. Just because you're focused on this one thing, maybe everybody's really liking this other thing that you're doing that was sort of not even really, it was an afterthought. And so, you know, it's okay to gravitate towards what people are enjoying most and just find your path from there.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. I understand that you got to talk to one of our clients recently, Ricky Briganti. Am I saying that right? Or Briganti?
Briganti? You're saying it right. Ricky Briganti. He's the founder of Inside the Magic. He started off just as a podcaster literally 13 years ago. He said, you know what? This podcasting looks cool. I'm going to go ahead and talk about Disney. I love Disney. We're going to talk about that. And within a few months, he had thousands of followers, and it led to an eventual blog, which became an eventual website, to an eventual YouTube channel, to an eventual 900 million views on YouTube. I did say 900 million.
Whoa.
That's nearly a billion views, 11,000 articles on the website, something like 64 million views, 17 million views in the last 12 months. Just incredible, the volume and the numbers. And one of the smartest things he said, that he's sharing his advice, not just in terms of building a content business and the ways that he did it and following his passion, but the fact that he just sold the business, he said something most sellers don't necessarily want to hear, which is, don't be afraid to have a conversation with someone like you or me or Jason or Chuck, because you're only going to learn from it. And he wished that he did that 3 or 4 years ago, because he feels like he would have sold his business for a whole lot more if he just planned in advance.
Yeah, I mean, you know this, Joe. A lot of times when a business owner talks to us and they're not in the mindset of selling, and they hear what we do, they almost get defensive. We see this at conferences a lot. They come up to the table and they say, so what do you do? Well, we help people sell their online businesses. Well, I don't want to sell. That's okay. You don't need to. And I'm not going to sell your business without you knowing. Trust me.
Life happens. Life gets in the way. You get gray hair, you know, whatever happens. You mature and you realize that I'm never going to sell my business is a temporary mindset. You should always build your business with the idea of selling it. I asked this question of a half a dozen people this week at the show, which is, do you know what the value of your house is? Yeah, it's about this. Do you know what the value of your car? Yeah, it's about this. How's the value of your 401k or your SEP? It's about this. What's the value of your business? Silence. They really don't know. They don't know how to calculate it. And most of those times, the most valuable asset that they own is their business. So Ricky talked about that a little bit. And he just talked really about content sites, content development, advertising, following your passion. And there's really not a whole lot of tricks to it. No gimmicks, just really just doing the right thing. And the traffic follows.
I love these interviews with previous clients. I think there's just so much insight to gain from them. I don't have too much more to say, so let's go ahead and get into the interview.
Let's do it. Hey, Ricky, welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on. It's good to see you again. I haven't physically seen you, and people that are listening, we're actually recording this as well on video. I haven't seen you since we did the recording for getting your business launched and sold, which is now done. So we're here to talk about that process and more about you and your experience as a content creator, a YouTuber, all these things that you've done, some huge numbers. But as I said in the intro, or as pre-intro, as we talked, we don't do fancy introductions about people. We want to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. So for anybody listening, why don't you just give us a little bit of background on you, your backstory, and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I'm Ricky Briganti, obviously. I started a website, well, it was originally a podcast called Inside the Magic 13 years ago. And at the time, it was, I had just freshly moved to Orlando. You know, I was from Florida, was visiting theme parks, particularly Disney, for my whole lifetime, going on trips with family and all of that. And then went through school, went through college, decided to move to Orlando to be close to it all. And then heard of this thing called a podcast. And like, oh, that sounds fun. I had sort of dabbled in audio video production, you know, through my schooling years. And I was like, okay, I'll just do this for a fun hobby. You know, I'll talk about Disney maybe 10, 15 minutes a week. And then, you know, after a few weeks, I'll probably get bored of it and moved on. And so much to my surprise, within literally the first episode, all of a sudden there were, you know, over 100 people who tuned in. I was like, oh, that's okay, sure. That's not bad. Started getting emails from people, and then it, you know, 100 turned into 200 and turned into 500. And over the first few weeks, suddenly it was thousands. I was like, oh, this is, I guess, a thing that I'm going to be doing. So, you know, without going through the entire 13-year history, essentially the podcast kept steamrolling like that. Eventually got to a point where I turned it into a full website, not just an audio show. You know, created a blog, which ultimately turned into a sort of a news site around the, not just Disney, but expanded to more of the themed entertainment industry, Universal and other independent attractions. And over years and years of doing that by myself, it kept growing, and I realized I needed help. So I started bringing on volunteers and then started paying people as more, you know, advertising money came in. And along the way, got accepted by Disney and Universal and others to be at grand openings and giant events and do amazing interviews, and had some pretty fantastic times. Eventually, finally realizing, oh, this is actually a business in the making. It's more than just me. So I turned that, you know, started to hiring people, went through a few, you know, staff changes, and ultimately found an amazing team of reporters that was really solid and impressed me like crazy. And I after all of that, finally got into a place where I was like, you know, I think I've hit where I'm good with this. Everybody's, you know, doing a great job, and somebody else could probably come in and do a better job than I could from now on, because I want to pursue other things. So that's it in a nutshell.
Well, you did it longer than most entrepreneurs. Most do it for 6 or 7 years. Some get, you know, tired after 2 or 3, but you did it for 13, which is a long time. How long was it before you went from the podcast to the blog and generating advertising revenue?
It was for the first maybe 2 or 3 years, there was no revenue at all. It was just a hobby completely. And I did it in my spare time, which got increasingly more and more eating into my spare time. And then, you know, I was like, oh, maybe I should throw some ads on this. And so it started picking up. But it wasn't really until maybe 5 or 6 years into it that, you know, because this was before YouTube, before Facebook, before Twitter, before blogs really had gotten, you know, become as big as they are. And it took a while for, you know, sort of these big companies to realize the value in allowing me to be part of their sort of big media festivities and, you know, arranging interviews and allowing me access to cover things in a much better way than just from afar. And so at that point, that's when things really started to sort of explode, particularly with the YouTube channel. That was sort of always the bread and butter of it.
So let's talk about the YouTube channel. I think you've got almost 800 million views on YouTube. Is that right? More than that, actually.
So it's over 900 million now, but it's not mine anymore. But but yeah, it's getting close to 1 billion views on the channel, which is a lot.
That's really incredible. Close to 1 billion views. Tell us how you did that. How did you, you know, did you hire somebody to help you with the YouTube channel? Talk about that a little bit for anybody listening that may have a content site and mm-hmm. wants to get that video portion of it. What is the right process and right thing to do there in your experience?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a one right methodology. It definitely helped that I was, you know, joining that very early on, you know, right when YouTube was in its infancy. And so there wasn't a lot of content like I was putting out, theme park related content at the time. So that always helps, you know, to get in early. Obviously, that doesn't help anybody today. But I think the key, and this would actually be true for YouTube, be true of the podcast, be true of the website, it's to produce really good quality content on a regular basis, and then most importantly, see what people, you know, pay attention. Just because you're focused on this one thing, maybe everybody's really liking this other thing that you're doing that was sort of not even really, it was an afterthought. And so, you know, it's okay to gravitate towards what people are enjoying most and just find your path from there. So did you take, did you advertise on your blog, on your website that you had a YouTube channel, and did that start to get the views there? Or did you actually do any paid advertising?
Well, it was kind of a combination. I never, in the history of the 13 years, I almost never paid for any advertising for Inside the Magic. I did minor Facebook ads here and there to, you know, boost a few posts. But other than that, I really didn't do any. It all grew very organically. Fortunately, what's great about a podcast, and I'm sure you know this, is it's a very personal connection to listeners or to viewers. And it allows you to sort of, they feel like they're a good friend of yours. And so when you say, hey, I started this, you know, YouTube channel, come check it out. Like, oh, cool, Ricky started a YouTube channel. Not like this corporation has tried to do this promotional thing. You know, it feels like a personal relationship. And as long as you don't try to take too much advantage of that, you know, you treat people like people, not just as products or, you know, customers, or, you know, everybody's out there because you're sharing a passion. That's what really it came down to. So that showed through no matter which version of things I was working on.
So the podcast really led a lot of people to the YouTube site.
I think so at first. That's probably what started. But then YouTube has its own, you know, recommendation engine, and it found just sort of a life of its own, that there would be people on the YouTube channel that had no idea there was a podcast and had no idea there was a website. And there were people on the website that had no idea there was a YouTube channel. And it's sort of these individual, unique communities that definitely sort of grew organically. I would say back when Facebook organic reach was a lot better than it is now, but, you know, several years ago, that also helped drive viewers to YouTube. You know, you used to be able to paste a YouTube video on Facebook and it would show up huge on everyone's feed and it would autoplay. And that was a great way to get it off the ground. Nowadays, you can't really do that anymore.
Well, on the Facebook side, you've got a pretty good following, something like 750,000.
Yeah, almost.
Social media followers. That, yeah. And I keep saying you, and it's not you anymore. It's Kurt, the guy that bought it.
Right.
That owns it. So I'll slip back and forth here. But 750,000 social media followers, almost 900 million video views. How many actually page views on the website itself, do you know?
Oh gosh. I mean, we were at the height, pushing, you know, 1 million uniques a month.
Okay, that's pretty impressive. How did you churn out the articles? I know there were about 11,000 articles at the time we launched A Business for Sale. How did you consistently write new content on a regular basis? And did you focus on certain keywords for SEO purposes, or did you just write good quality stuff and people watched?
You know, that was a huge sort of learning curve for me. I'd always been a pretty decent writer, but I didn't know what it, I mean, I never went to journalism school. I didn't know what it meant to write a specific kind of writing that is, you know, informational largely and telling a story. And I knew very early on that I never, despite doing a podcast where people just listen to me yammer on about things, I never really wanted the focus to be on me. It was always about the content and what I was talking about or writing about. It was the information I was presenting and doing that in such a way that made people interested in the full story. It wasn't just like, here's a little tidbit, moving on. You know, it was like, well, what does that mean? What's the why? I focused on why a lot, really. You know, they say there's the 5 W's, but to me, why is always the hardest question to answer. It's the most interesting question. You know, what's the reason that a designer put this thing on the wall? Why, you know, now? Why this place? Why this IP? You know, there's a million whys you can always ask. And those are the hard questions that I tried to largely focus on when writing. And in the process, I definitely wrote with an SEO mindset. You know, I didn't write traditional grabby headlines so much as like Google friendly headlines with a lot of keywords. I definitely tried to write, you know, content that had, if I was writing about a specific new ride that Disney opened, for example, I would make sure to include exactly that particular phrasing of that ride 5 or 6 times in the article so that, you know, I mean, those are sort of standard SEO tactics. And that worked fairly well. It got us, you know, good placement in news cycles.
But were you writing for Google or for the person that was actually going to read it, or a combination of both?
Definitely a combination. I tried to keep both in mind because I didn't want it to be illegible. You know, I didn't want it to just feel like it was this keyword saturated nonsense. So I guess it was a balance of figuring out, okay, how much keyword saturation did I need and how long could I make the piece so that felt very natural.
Okay. So
for those that are developing content sites, really the way that I looked at yours and still do is that this was a real legitimate business in a passionate niche that you care deeply about and shared that enthusiasm with others. The end result was a fantastic business that sold at a great price for you and also provided a good living for more than a decade.
So, yeah, definitely. I think the passion is what was most important about it all. And that's ultimately what influenced my decision to sell the business. Because over the years, you know, you do something for, I did the podcast literally every week for 10 years. I didn't miss a single week. And after that, I got a little burnt out on it. You know, the passion was starting to dwindle. And I knew that I couldn't produce my best work if I didn't have my heart behind it. Whereas I saw, as I brought on new staff members, their passion was reminded me of how, you know, when I started. So I was like, okay, it's time to hand that off because I have, you know, other passions that I wanted to follow in life and, you know, it's time to move on.
Well, let's talk about that process a little bit. Let's shift from the development of this amazing content site, this YouTube machine that you built, to the business that you decided to sell. I think you and I, prior to listing the business, we'd been chatting for the better part of a year, I think, right?
Yeah, it was like 8 or 9 months before we finally listed it that I first emailed you. And at that time you were like, you got to work on this. You got to work on that. So.
Right. Right. And you had made the decision at one point, like many entrepreneurs, you're like, okay, I'm tired. I'm done. I need to let somebody else run this.
Right.
And you stepped back from it and you put other people in place. Tell us how that worked out a little bit and what your mindset was at the time and how you had to shift afterwards.
It's definitely a really challenging process to go from what was largely a one-man operation to, you know, becoming a legitimate, for lack of a better word, business. I went through almost three entire staff sort of setups before I finally found the right group of people and the right flow and the way that it worked. It was hard for a while. You know, I it's like I had some really amazing people and they just didn't work well together. And I wasn't able to give it my all to make it work. And so then it was like, okay, move this person out, move this person. It was like a chess game, figuring out the right pieces next to each other. It was definitely a lot of work. I didn't realize that in trying to remove myself from the business, I was actually giving myself more work than I had ever done.
You were no longer a writer, a podcaster. You were really a manager of people that were not happy with each other, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, and then ultimately people were very happy with each other, fortunately. I had to learn how to be a boss, how to be a manager, how to be a, you know, staffing recruiter. I had never done any of these things before. So I just figured it out as I went.
Right. So you built that up. You were a one-man show for a long, long time, put staff in place. And then you step back from the business. And I think that's when we first chatted. You were kind of burnt out and you had stepped away from the business. And unfortunately, it timed with your costs going up and some of your numbers coming down.
Right.
Some of the decisions some of the people made. And you stepped back in. Still wasn't full-time. I don't think it was full-time at all by the time we started talking. But the timing of a sale is critically important, as you've learned, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. No, that's a good point. Cause yeah, I had overstaffed and that was impacting the bottom line tremendously, to the point where there was even a negative month, which was not happy to see. So I knew at that point, I was like, okay, this is not going in the right direction. I need to make some drastic changes. And yeah, even though I had stepped back significantly for a whole year, I had to jump in full force, which of course, you know, when you told me that what I needed to do, I was not happy at all.
Sorry about
like,
that.
Okay, here, I got it. But somehow I found it within myself. I'm like, all right, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to commit to this idea. With your guidance, which thank you, it helps tremendously, checking in throughout the months and sort of navigating I had never sold a business before. I didn't know what that process was like. So it helped tremendously for you to be incredibly patient with me, walk me through the process, and eventually I fully understood what it was going to take for me to get there.
Well, let's just talk about that for a moment, because I have these conversations a lot, and oftentimes I'm tapping myself on the chest saying, you've got to have the heart to do it, right? Because there's, you know, it's easy to look at the P&L and the numbers and the trends and say, like Mark Dowse told me when I first sold my business through Quiet Light in 2010, he's like, Joe,
wait 6 more months, the trailing 9, 10, 11, 12 will fall off and you'll make an extra X amount of dollars. And I did, I waited. You and I had that same conversation, and I've had that with dozens of other entrepreneurs. But what you had, and what's so important for those people listening, is the heart to do it. Because you were done, you were tired, you were ready to move on. You stepped back from the business and you said, I've got a cash cow here. This is just going to keep generating revenue. These people are going to run it for me. And unfortunately, it didn't work. And the trends took an ugly turn. You stepped in and you fixed it. But we had to give it some time, right? We talked for 8 or 9 months. So what we did for people listening is that we let that time pass. And then we saw what the most recent 6 months did. And we absolutely did not do 6 months times 12, times two to get the trailing 12. We had to still do the trailing 12 months because every buyer wanted that. Every buyer looked at that. And the business was seasonal. It's Disney, right? There's big events. There's summer times. There's fourth quarter. There's Thanksgiving, Christmas, all those things. So we had to adjust the P&L to what you've been doing the last 6 months and do some things that we don't necessarily love to do, which is pro forma stuff. But we did it with math and logic and a lot of work on your part, and it worked. We had a couple of offers right out of the gate. And of course,
surprisingly fast.
But we knew, right, that this is a niche where it's full of passion,
right?
Both from you and the people that visited by the millions every month. The person, the couple people that come to mind, were they passionate about Disney or were they just investors?
Right.
One of them was very, very passionate about Disney. I think he probably visited more than you, right?
Lately, yeah, that's probably true over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So it was a matter of finding the right person for the business and being very passionate about it. And then for those listening, we did find an SBA buyer, Small Business Administration, and there were some real benefits to that. Then again, there were some real challenges along the way, timing-wise. Typically, an SBA loan is going to take an extra 30 to 45 days over a cash buyer. In this case, I think we were at least at 90 days. Is that right?
More than we were pushing 100 something.
So we went through Thanksgiving and Christmas, so that can slow things down.
Yeah.
But the whole process took a little long and the communication was a little hard, and you were very patient. What was the upside? What was the upside for those listening to having to wait? It was that you owned the business for an extra 45, 50, 60 days, and you got that revenue, right?
Right. Well, sure. Especially in the business that I've been doing, you know, a lot of the ad revenue that comes in is on net 30, even sometimes net 60. So I'm actually still, even though we closed, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I'm still going to get a pretty good additional check in another couple of weeks, just from some of that residual, you know, what last month that was added on there that wasn't expected, but sure, I'll take it.
Right. All right. So let's talk about what, if you could do it all over again, on the business itself, in terms of that transition from being the solopreneur to hiring people,
right,
to trying to step back and realizing you wanted to sell. Is there anything that you would do differently for anybody that's listening, you know, that wants to walk down your path of an eventual sale?
Yeah, definitely. And this is probably the case with a lot of people that, you know, you're by yourself, you're working like crazy on something that you're passionate about. You want to bring on help. Who do you go to? You go to people you know. You go to your friends, you go to family or people that feel like family. Bad idea. It's you work very well with those people at first, but you don't know how that working relationship is going to be. And then more importantly, if that goes south, you don't know what the fallout of that is going to be. And is there, you know, the challenge of having to tell someone who is a friend, I don't want you anymore. That's really hard. Whereas if you just hire someone out of the blue, a lot easier to, you know, part ways when, you know, make those business decisions that you need to make. So I definitely realized, and I will carry this forward in any business I'm ever involved with again, if I'm in that position, that I would rather hire people that it's like that I either don't know or that I only professionally know, that I know they're a good worker and I don't need to try to socialize with them. You know, it was hard for me to transition into that boss role.
Never hire someone you can't fire.
Exactly. That's a very succinct way of putting it.
Okay. And then in terms of positioning the business for sale, looking back, are there certain things that you wish you had done?
Oh boy, I guess. It's relevant to what we were just saying. I wish I had, gotten rid of some extra people sooner so that I wouldn't have had such a couple of, poor months that were bringing the numbers down. I guess I wish I had started thinking about this earlier, that it's not as scary as I thought it was going to be to just open that conversation with someone like you, to understand what it takes to sell a business, what you need to strive for. If I had known that 2 or 3 years ago, I probably could have sold sooner and potentially even at a higher price, because I would have been more focused on putting the pieces together rather than trying to rush to make that happen.
Right. So I was at the Prosper Show last week and I said this probably 85 times. Don't wake up one day and decide to sell.
Right.
Plan to sell. And that's what you're saying, is that if you plan it well in advance, don't be afraid to have conversations with people about the value of your business and what to do and how to do it. You're a mature entrepreneur, professional. No one's going to talk you into signing an engagement letter just to get their hooks into you for commission. Have that conversation. That's what the advisors are there for. They, more people they talk to, the more business they get for themselves as well. So plan to sell. Don't decide to sell. Think about it well in advance is the other piece of advice that you give.
Definitely.
Okay. And on the content creation side, you think that if anybody can pull off doing a podcast, they should go for it because it gets more personal?
You know, I saw a really funny video going around online. I think it was from Funny or Die or College Humor, one of those, where someone was going to start a podcast about something inane. And the whole video was focused on reasons why you shouldn't start a podcast. It was literally called "Your Podcast Will Fail." And the crux of it was essentially, there are a lot of podcasts out there. Not everybody wants to listen to you talk about the latest episode of Game of Thrones, you know? But if you do have a significant passion about something, and this is why I think it worked for me, I didn't really set out to make it a business. You know, I did it because I wanted to, because I was going to have fun with it, because I wanted to connect with people. And that's what a podcast is great for. So if your goal is to do anything that's just, hey, I'm talking to you because I enjoy it and because I want to, bring a connection together, I think that's a great reason to do it. Not so much if you're just looking to either become famous or make a quick buck, because you're probably not going to do either one of those quickly.
And you know what you did though, and you're very humble about it, but you took a hobby. I'm going to spend 15, 20 minutes talking about something I love every week, to 11,000 articles, 700,000 social media followers, almost a billion video views. That's pretty huge. So don't, go lightly about, your own endorsement. You've done something pretty impressive. What are you moving on to now? What's your next adventure? I think you're staying in the attractions area, right?
Yeah. One really sort of unexpected result of doing what I did for the last 13 years was having tremendous chances to get to know some of the top talent in the themed entertainment industry, from, the best designers that have been there for decades at Disney, people who I really respect and look up to, and people who I had read about in books. And it was like, oh, now I get to talk to this person. It is like I, over, the last 13 years have gotten sort of a master class in design, in themed entertainment design specifically. And so I've been so inspired along the way that now I'm, sort of venturing off to be a creator instead of just a commentator or an observer. So I've joined with a company called Pseudonym Productions here in Orlando to create our own productions. It's that we've actually already done four over the last 3 years, but now we're really, I'm going to be spending a lot more time full time making us have a more permanent place that we can, people can enjoy what we do year round rather than just a few weeks at a time.
Are you a future Walt Disney? Is that what you're saying? 100 years from now, it's going to be you?
I think our content might be a little bit on the unique and possibly weird side sometimes. More skewed toward the older audiences. But sure, anything's possible. And I would love to see what we've started very small here, just like I did with, beginning the podcast, and that sort of growing and growing and growing. Gosh, for the next 10 years, who knows how big this could become? We could have, productions running worldwide.
Well, you're passionate about something, and based upon your history, I'm sure you're going to do pretty amazing with it. Will you continue as a freelance writer for the Perks to Disney for Inside the Magic?
I mean, well, I will say that with the new owner, Kurt, I already have sort of a handshake agreement that I'm going to come back next year when the big Star Wars land opens, because I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. And I didn't want to miss out on that. So I think I'll pop back in from time to time, you know, whenever he might need some help, or just when I'm sort of beg him to go to some cool event. But for the most part, I'm going to try to put some distance there.
Awesome. Well, you probably need a break from it. In time, I think you'll probably say to yourself, gosh, I wish I could get in. I wish you could meet that person. And as long as you keep a good relationship with Kurt, you've got an in, right?
Or I sure hope so.
As the next Walt Disney, people will be coming to you anyway. Any last minute thoughts, any advice that you'd give an entrepreneur that's developing a content site, a YouTube channel, in terms of what they can do to do as well as you have?
Well, so here's the thing that I'm taking forward with me, even with Pseudonym Productions, because it's also, you know, we're going to generate content. It's a very different type of content, but it's still content creation. And I think it's important to, while be business minded about it, it's really doing it because you love it, and because you can, I mean, as you were saying earlier, the heart for it. I think if you start in with a goal of something astronomical and massive from nothing, there's a good chance you're not going to get there, in at least not as quickly as you hope you will. But, you know, it's write what you know, what you love, you know, whether you're just making a vlog, or you're writing something, or you're taking photos for Instagram. Do it because you love it, and don't really have any expectations. You know, sort of clear your mind, share things that you like, and follow, you know, wherever that goes. I mean, it's, most of it's free to do. You know, everyone's got a phone, everyone's got, you know, an internet connection. Just do it, create, you know?
I like it. That's excellent advice. I appreciate your time, man. We're running out. I want to make sure that we share some show notes, people to reach out to. What is the name of the production company again, for people listening?
Pseudonym Productions, and the website is pseudonymproductions.com, and that's where all the contact info is too.
They can reach you there, and they should definitely look it up if they're ever heading to Orlando, right? As an alternative to Inside the Magic.
Yeah, exactly. And we're you know, looking for partners as well to create awesome new things. So if anyone likes what you see on the website and want to become part of it, reach out. You know, I'll send you an email back.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Ricky. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.